This is the Mason Vera Payne Show,
your go-to lifestyle podcast, covering everything from technology and gaming
to movies, TV shows, and pop culture to the supernatural and beyond.
Brought to you from Chicago, USA,
with your host, the unabridged millennial, Mason Vera Payne.
This is the unabridged millennial, Mason Vera Payne, and thank you for tuning in. Whether you're into politics or not, the 2016 presidential election has been one hard thing to ignore. From superdelegates to backdoor delegate deals, this has been one heck of a confusing ride. Joining me to explain the rules of each party is Associate Professor of Political Science at Barry University in Miami, Florida, Sean Foreman. Thanks for joining, Sean.
Thank you for having me.
All right, so, you know, this election cycle has been really interesting with Trump and Hillary and, you know, people stealing delegates and stuff, you know. So has there ever been one like this in history before?
Well, this one certainly seems to take the cake. We've seen a lot of things that we have not seen before in terms of the heavy rhetoric used, in terms of all the confusion over the delegate count, and of course the way that Trump has kind of changed the rules when it comes to campaigning for president. But, you know, there have been some contentious elections in the past. There have definitely been close and controversial ones. If we go back 100 or even 200 years, but this one is certainly different than anything we've seen in recent times and probably any of our lifetimes.
You said Trump changed the rules? How did that happen?
Yeah, well, of course, I mean that as a figure of speech, because honestly, he played within the rules to win the Republican nomination or to become the presumptive nominee. He earned those delegates the old-fashioned way, going state to state and making appearances and working the local community to get the vote. So what I mean by change the rules is Donald Trump has taken on new ways of running a presidential campaign. He didn't worry about raising $100 million like Jeb Bush did, which was unsuccessful. In fact, one of the things now is Trump's not raising enough money, even though he himself claims to have billions that he could spend his own money. He changed the rules by making demands at the debates. If you remember back, he even skipped one of the debates on Fox News right before the Iowa caucus, which was very unusual, but probably came back to hurt Trump. He didn't win Iowa. Ted Cruz did for the Republicans, and some of us think that was in part because of Trump's antics there at the end. And then just the way that he has said so many inflammatory things that you wouldn't say if you're running for president, you know, criticizing John McCain, making comments about all kinds of groups of people. We know what he's been saying. Normally that would kill somebody's campaign, but it seems to, in fact, be propelling Trump. And by that, he's changing the way we think about presidential campaigns.
You know, you said that Iowa was a big deal, and I know it has to do with the Iowa caucus. Is there any other state that has something like that?
There are several states that have caucuses. It gets really confusing when we look at this whole process. Iowa had a caucus, New Hampshire had a primary, South Carolina had a primary, Nevada had a caucus. But I think that's one of the things that both parties are going to explore for 4 years from now, which one is the better method or what works best in which states. Caucuses are sort of old-fashioned, and they really require voters to make a serious time commitment to go out and spend maybe a couple of hours at their polling location rather than just going in and voting and leaving. We know on the Democratic side that Bernie Sanders did especially well in the caucus state, and that's because when you gather people together and they have a chance to talk to each other, they have a greater chance of influencing their neighbors. And I think that was where Sanders really did well, was word of mouth, new voters, young voters. People were energized to get involved, and so both Trump and Sanders did well in caucus states, but there are more primary states, and ultimately that's what helped Hillary Clinton to defeat Sanders on the Democratic side.
You know, when it came to Trump, he won a lot of states, but then Ted Cruz came kind of behind him and was able to take his delegates. I really didn't understand that. I mean, are there rules that, you know, people don't normally know or that just doesn't happen that often to see it?
Right. It's a little bit of both. You know, the rules on the delegate selection are very complicated and intricate. And we could have a whole class, a whole seminar just on those rules. And the thing is, they change, actually, every 4 years. They can change. Every state gets to decide how they'll pick their delegates and whether they'll have a caucus or primary and what time of year they'll have it within a set calendar. So I think maybe you're referring to, I think it was Louisiana, where Trump won the vote, but then several weeks later, it was found out that Cruz got more delegates because some states do it statewide and some states break it down by congressional district. And then some vote for delegates who are party activists separately from voting for presidential candidate, and they don't always match up. And so that's where, when we talk about the rules, Trump didn't change the rules. Those rules were there. He just probably, he and his team were not aware of them in the same way that Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio were. And you know, we do have to give credit to what Trump has done, because even with all of this complexity and confusion and being a newcomer to the process, whether you like him or not, he did win within the established procedures of the Republican nomination process.
Yeah, it really seemed like he went kind of old school, going around house to house, shaking hands and kissing babies, and instead of trying to, you know, mess with the rules a little bit. And that's where I was getting confused at, because to me, it's like, I'm not sure who I support. Everybody has their own little thing. But, you know, Trump won fair and square. And to me, it's like the delegates was a bit like cheating. And it turns out it's been around for long, long time. And, you know, I started thinking about Hillary and Clinton, and Bill Clinton, he's a superdelegate himself. Isn't that kind of cheating? Yeah. when you know, your husband happens to be one? I mean, you know, I don't think that's kind of fair, or is it?
Well, I suppose it depends on, you know, who someone is supporting and what they think about party insiders playing a role. Whether it's fair or not, you know, Bill Clinton, as a former president, is automatically a superdelegate, just like former President Jimmy Carter. So, in a nutshell, the Democrats changed their rules in 1972 to make it easier for the regular folk, for us voters, to have a say in picking their nominee, to make it more democratic, to say. That resulted in George McGovern winning the nomination in 1972. He appealed to the grassroots and the youth. He was against the Vietnam War, and that was the hot issue in 1972. But then he got crushed in the general election by Richard Nixon. And Carter won the nomination, but also barely won. So then the Democratic Party said, you know what? Maybe we're not getting our strongest candidates if we just go to a straight vote of all the Democratic voters out there. So let's put in a little safeguard, and let's say all of the elected Democrats in Congress, governors, senators, and former presidents like Bill Clinton, let's give them a special vote. Let's make them all delegates, and they can decide who they want. And the idea was indeed to be a check and balance so that the establishment person like Hillary Clinton would have an advantage over the outsider like Bernie Sanders. Now, it just so happens that, you know, she is the wife of the former president, but these rules were in place long before either one of them decided to run for president.
Now, you said, like, they made rules. Are these laws, or is this like a group, an organization? Like, how does that work? You know, it's kind of, I think, kind of cool that it's almost like a secret club is making up all these rules. And it's like, I want to read the handbook. Is it available?
It is. I think you can go on both the Democratic National Committee, the DNC, and the Republican National Committee, the RNC. I think you can go on their websites and find the rules. I've looked at them in the past. And then one of the things that they do, so each party has committee members. They get selected out of their local state and local county parties. Democrats have more national committee members than Republicans. And again, you know, it is pretty complex that people could look up or ask us if they have specific questions. But then those folks go to the conventions next in July, and they meet like a secret club and go over the rules and go over any changes they may want to make to the rules. They're not laws, they're rules. The Democratic Party and Republican Party are private organizations, legal entities, and they can make rules to govern how they operate. And that gets us into a whole other thing, how the Democrats and Republicans really have a stranglehold on the system. You know, with presidential debates, they're able to keep the Libertarian and the Green Party candidates out most of the time with the way that it's covered in the media. So the Democrats and Republicans are pretty good at keeping closed clubs. But again, back to what Trump and Sanders have done is they've opened the door and they've got a foot in. So that we're seeing a lot more of this stuff than we ever have before.
How are they able to get a foothold? I mean, you know, this is, for a long time, I knew about superdelegates, but I didn't really know their role. They weren't really in the news. Do you think that's what it is, that because of the internet and, you know, 24-hour news cycle, that we're able to see this as constituents?
Yeah, I think that's a great point. The internet and the dissemination of information is a huge part of it. So we would have had to search for this stuff before, go to the library or read it in a college textbook to get these rules on the parties. But now you can find it out there. And then, of course, with social media, the way that people can get organized quickly, can spread messages and videos, can shift on the turn of a dime if news or circumstances change. It really does empower the grassroots. It empowers outsider candidates and causes. And so I think we're just at the beginning of sort of cracking this old system, the old boys network, as it's referred to, the meet and close smoke-filled back rooms, making deals. You know, we're really breaking into that in democratizing society, not just in politics, but in all areas, banking and universities and healthcare. So I think that's part of it. The Sanders revolution, he would not have been as popular if it weren't for the use of social media and getting people energized that way. And Trump, of course, has benefited from free media, cable news coverage, and people just continuing to talk about what he's doing. And so as more people get involved, more people learn about the rules, which may be unfair, but at least, again, complicated, then more people have questions about it. And I think, again, we're going to see changes, not this year because we're already three-fourths of the way through the process, but in the future, there's going to be a big call for changes. But it's one of those things, be careful what you wish for. Once we start changing the way these rules work, we don't know what we'll end up in. We may end up opening it up in a way where we have undesirable candidates able to rise to the top of the popularity contest.
Well, thanks, Sean. I really appreciate you coming on and explaining some of this stuff about this electoral process. All right.
Thank you, Mason. I look forward to doing it again.
If you're interested in learning more about Sean Forman and his works, like him on Facebook and follow him on Twitter at Dr. Sean Forman. That's all one word.
This has been the Mason Vera Payne Show. Thanks for listening.
Can't wait to hear more?
Subscribe, rate, and comment at masonverapayne.com.
That's masonverapayne.com.
Also, follow Mason on Facebook and Twitter at Mason Vera Payne. That's all one word. And don't forget to share the show with your friends.